year will be beginning Bofa Basra Mem Dalid Omed Aleph at the very top. However, before we can proceed with the Gemara itself, it would be necessary to give a brief review of the topic in which we are currently in the middle of. So on Daf Mem Gimel Omed Beis, we had seen a Tanaic source, the upper part of the page. Was a Reisha and a Seifa. The Reisha described a case of a sale of a house, and the source said that the mocher can't be made for the lokeach. That's as far as the source itself was concerned. What were the circumstances behind that? So Rav Sheshes offered his explanation. And his explanation, if you see Daf Mem Gimel Amud Beis, you'll notice some double underlined words. So his explanation involved a case where Reuven stole a field from Shimon, and Reuven the thief sold it to Levi, and an outsider, Yehuda, came to protest, claiming he, Yehuda, is the owner. So the source is telling us that the Nigzal, Shimon, cannot testify on behalf of Levi against Yehuda's claims. Why is that? Because if Yehuda the Ma'arer would win, then Shimon the Nigzal would never see his field again. The Gemara on Mem Dalet Amud Aleph begins with a diamond. This diamond is part of a repeat effect. As you can see, there's another diamond, and those of us who are learning with the Shas Ozer pre-marked Gemara edition, many of you see it on your screen, and some of you have ordered your Gemara volumes. On the outside part of the page, we have an explanation, the Mivneh, what these forms are going to be doing. So you'll notice there the diamond, and it says Velukma, that's the term that's found in the diamond. What are these? She'elois al Rav Sheshes. They're questions on Rav Sheshes, who had appeared on Mem Gimel Amud Beis in the bowtie form. Lomahu hisbir es habraisa davka b'mikre shel gozal u'mochar. Why did he choose to explain the reisha davka involving a case of theft and subsequent sale? And that's what our Gemara asks right now. V'lukmo begazlon. Why not set up the reisha as a case involving a nigzal and a gazlon, without incorporating an additional stage where the gazlan sold it to a lokeach? To appreciate this on a deeper level, we'll take a look at the Rashbam. You'll notice in the Rashbam a triangled expression with a star next to it, and we'll read from that point. Umakshinon the Rav Sheshes. We're asking on Rav Sheshes, de ukmo belokeach min agazlan, that set up the reisha of that source on Mem Gimel Amud Beis as describing a person who purchased from a gazlan, shelo yoyid hanigzal la lokeach, and the halacha there would have been that Shimon the nigzal could not testify on behalf of Levi the lokeach. Velisni, and alternatively, the Rav Sheshes could have taught Gazlon im Isa lehach braisa kid meforish lo Rav Sheshes. If we're going to accept the principle of Rav Sheshes in his explanation of the source, in other words, introducing a gazlon which wasn't mentioned literally in the source, that was part of Rav Sheshes's explanation of the source. So he could have lomo le latana lidchoik atzmo lemisni. Why did the Tana have to extend himself or press himself into teaching the following? Mochar lo bayis gazlon la lokeach. that the mochar lo that was featured in the source was the gazlan selling to a lokeach. Falo hoyoyocho limtso din zeh, the Tana could have found his din of what the Tana said was ein meyed lo. He could have constructed a case of nogea bi'edus begazlan atzmo belo mechira. So the question is, if you accept Rav Sheshes' approach, why did the Tana have to include the case of Mochar? He could have had a case as follows. De'i osa Yehuda v'koma arer ole de gazlan ruvein. If an outsider came to protest the thief's holding of it, namely the thief, you can't be the owner of it, I'm the owner of it, meaning the outsider who claims that he's the owner. Ein meyed lo shimon ha'nigzal oleo. And then the source could have taught that Shimon, the Nigzal, the one who became bereft of his property, he cannot testify, ironically, you'll say, on behalf of Reuven, his thief. Mishum dehave nogea bi'edus. Shimon has a vested interest, kidet piresh, as we explained. Namely, Shimon, in this case, would benefit if the field remains in the hands of the thief, Reuven, and not fall into the hands of the outside protester. Because if it falls into the hands of the outside protester, Shimon will be declared as never having been the owner of it. If, however, it falls into it stays for the time being in the hands of Reuven, the thief, Shimon can deal with that. He'll have a chance of proving that Reuven's a thief and then getting it back from him. The Braisa should have said the following: Tana Rabbonon, Gozal lo bayis, Gozal lo sode, ein meyed lo oleo, mipnei shachar yuso shel nigzal ole de gazlan, because the nigzal has a benefit in, or a guarantee in, so far as getting his field back from the gazlan, making him no gabiatus. The question therefore has been raised. The Gemara answers, why was Mochar taught? Mishum de kaboi lemisne seifa, because the seifa of the source that you had seen on Mem Gimel Amid Beis, which was under the heading Roman numeral number 2, and it's quoted here, Mochar lo pora, Mochar lo talis. And in the seifa, it taught that meid lo aleha, that the Nigzal would be able to testify on behalf of the Lokeach. So, in order to get to the conclusion of the Seifa, namely Me'id Lo Aleo, allowing Shimon to testify against Yehuda, the outside protester, you have to have that stage in the case. As the Gemara explains, the Davka Mochar, the Have Le Yeush Vishinui Rishus, that only in the case that there had been Mechira as well, which creates the circumstances that would allow Shimon to be made. What are the circumstances that are necessary? We have Yeush, which is the Nigzal's sense of giving up hope, sense of abandonment, namely that once it was stolen, so he has this feeling of Yeush, declares to himself that he's not going to see it again. Vishinui Rishus, and the transfer of possession of ownership from the Gazlan to a third party. Therefore, skipping the bracketed section momentarily, therefore, Tona Resha Nami Mochar. That's why the Reisha also used a case of Mochar. This is a common phenomenon in Tanaic sources where, for the sense of balance, the same structure will be adopted. That in the Sefer it was necessary to have the case of Mechira. And what we'll do now is go back over the Gemara, starting in from the second line, and reading it straight through for the sake of completion. Reading the Gemara again, the Dafka Mochar, we said that in the case of the Seifa, you had to have the case of Mechira, the Havi Le Yeush Veshinu Rishus, Avol Lo Mochar, if you had a Gazlan who stole from the Nigzal, namely Ruvain, who stole from Shimon a Pora or Talis, but he didn't sell it to Levi, De Hodra Lay, under such circumstances, the item itself would go back to the Nigzal. Lo, there, the Nigzal would not be able to testify to benefit the Gazlan, because if there's only Yeush but no Shinui Rishus, namely it's in the hands of the thief and it doesn't transfer to a second, to a third party, then the Nigzal, the original owner, would be able to retrieve the actual item. And in that case, he would be having a vested interest in Yehuda, the outsider, not getting hold of it. Because if Yehuda gets hold of it, then the one who lost it, namely Shimon, will not get his item back. Therefore, the Gemara goes on to say, Tana Reishonami Mochar. Therefore, in the case of the Reisha, it also used that example. Gemara asks, in the Seifa, it's still not clear why the Nigzal is able to be made on behalf of the Lokech, the one who bought the Pora Talis. V'Seifa Nami Nihi Dimiyayesh Migufei. Even though he gives up hope on getting the actual item back, midomea mimiayish, from its value, from the money equivalent, is he giving up hope? Not at all. Therefore, he still is nogea biedus. Namely, if it turns out that the outside ma'arer, the Yehuda, in our example, would be declared the owner of the item, then the Nigzal won't get even financial compensation because he was never the owner of it. So that even though it's a case of Gozal u'Mochar where you have Yeush and Shinui Rishus, thereby guaranteeing that the item itself won't get back to the Nigzal, which we thought was grounds for allowing him to testify because he doesn't have a vested interest, that's not true. He still has a vested interest that, as long as the outside ma'arer doesn't win, he, the Nigzal, will have a chance of receiving compensation for his item, for the item that was stolen from him. So we're still hard-pressed to understand why in the Seifa is the Tana teaching that the Nigzal is able to be made on behalf of the Lokeach. The Gemara answers, Lo Tzricha. The Miss Gazlan. The case of the Seifa is where the thief who would have compensated Shimon, he died. Alright, so our Gazlan, Ruvain, died. Shimon the Nigzal is able to testify on behalf of Levi that the Pora Vitalis belonged to him against the outside Ma'arer. Does the Nigzal Shimon have anything to gain by that? No, because as we had asked a moment before, but wouldn't he stand to gain compensation from the Gazlan? But the Gazlan died. And what's the rule when the Gazlan dies? The Nigzal doesn't get compensation. Disnan, and the Gemara goes on to bring this out. Hagozel umachiles bonov iniach lifnehem turin milashalem. If a person stole something and left it to his children, the heirs, they are potter, they're exempt from needing to compensate. The Gemara goes on with a second question on Rav Sheshes. The Gemara asks, Velukma B'yoresh. The Reisha, we said, taught the case of Gozal u'Mochar because of the Seifa. The Gemara at this point is suggesting an alternative way to have set up for the Tana, to have set up the Reisha and Seifa. Namely, in the Reisha will come out saying Eino Meid, and the Seifa with the Por Vitalis, yes Meid. Let's take a look at the Rashbam, where once again you see a triangle in the middle of the wide lines with the triple asterisk. Umakshinon l'Rav Sheshes, the Ukma l'Reisha Begozal u'mochar mishum seifa. We're asking on Rav Sheshes, who set up the Reisha as involving gozal u'mochar because of the seifa, velukmo biyurish. Couldn't the Tana have set up a case involving an heir? Im isa de begozal u'mochar mairi u'bedemis gazlon. If we're going to accept all of those variables, as we had learned in the Gemara, where there was theft, subsequent sale, Gazlon died. Im kein ma ro hatana lidchoik atzmo velishnois shitosoi begazlon shemochar. Why is it so important for the Tana to teach that the theft sold it? Afilu lo mochar hagazlon nami. Even if the Gazlon didn't sell it, it simply was transferred as bequeathed unto his children through the inheritance procedure. The same din would apply. Elo, you could have had gozal umeis, where there was theft and he died. V'kivon demeis horish lebonav, and upon his death, it's transferred to his sons. Hoyo yochol limtso chiluk bein reisha l'seifa. We still could have found a distinction between the reisha and the seifa. The Tana's basic din would have remained. Kigoin Ruvein shegozal soda mishimon umis gazlon. V'yorshoi Levi Beno. Same names. Ruvain the thief stole from Shimon, and while in the possession of Ruvain, he died. So it transfers through Yerusha to his son Levi. So Levi, instead of before, who was our Lokeach, he's now the Yoresh. V'osa Yehuda v'koma Arer. What would the din be? Lo Lazel Shimon the Nigzal. Umasid Lelevi ben Ruvain, he would not be able to testify on behalf of Levi, the son of the Gazlan. De Lav de Yehuda he, his testimony would have been that it doesn't belong to Yehuda. Why is it that Shimon cannot testify? Because he stands to gain his karka back that way. De karka ain't an exelus. That's a concept that applies to landed properties, that unlike portables, land is not something that we say is subject to real theft. The Hodrolei min hayoresh, it'll go back from the heir of the Gazlan to the Nigzal. Mishum hochi no gea b'edusahu. And this is why he has a vested interest. Imapik lo Yehuda minei diyoresh. If Yehuda, the outside protester, would be successful in his claims and extricated from the Yoresh of the Gazlan, Lo hadro l'Shimon, it won't go back to the one who lost it, to Shimon, the Nigzal. Dehecho dekaima ara tekum, where the land is, it will remain. Namely, if Yehuda is successful in getting it, it'll remain by him. Aval b'seifa shegoza ruvein talis upora mi Shimon umeis v'yor shelevi beno v'asa Yehuda v'kama arer. The same case, but this time involving portables, the talis or pora, made lo Shimon olea. Shimon would, yes, be able to testify against Yehuda's claims. De'iko yeush biyad Ruvain, because the rule states that if you've got yeush and shinui rishus, then the nigzal won't get his item back. That's what the Rashbam tells you. Diko Yeush Biad Ruvain Vishinui Rishus Biad Levi Yoresh. Ruvain the thief, that was the point at which the Yeush set in. Then when he died, there was a transfer of domain to his son Levi. The Rishus Yoresh Ki Rishus Lokeach Domi. We view the Rishus of the heir as if he's a purchaser, considered an outside. He's considered an unrelated entity. V'lo tehader le lanigza lo pora v'lo domeha. And we would say that the pora, that's not going back. There was yeush and shini rishus. And also there's no value compensation because the thief is gone. He was the one that we would have expected to compensate, but he died. V'lo havi nogeh be'edus. And therefore the nigzal doesn't have a vested interest because he's not going to get anything back. This is what it should have said. Gozal lo bayis vahorish livno ain meid. However, gozal lo pora vahorish, he is meid. Vahai dekomar velukmo biyoresh lav davka. Elo lisni, instead of using the Gemara used the expression velukmo, set it up, biyoresh. It's an expression that's not meduyok. Elo lisni yoresh. The suggestion is that the Tana should have taught lisni. That expression means should have taught yoresh. The agav shitfo demakshi leila rav sheshes demeforesh umuki lo begazlon. Since the Gemara is addressing its questions toward Rav Sheshes, who set up, that's Lukma, who set up the case involving Gazlon Komar v'Lukma b'Yoresh. Umiyu, b'Yoresh lo motzilu kuma da katani mochar. Elim kein mitaretz lo lemisni horish. It's impossible to set up the source as it is involving Yoresh, because the source teaches mechira, teaches a sale. Unless, of course, you would follow the suggestion of restating the original source using the word horish instead of mechira. That last point that we've mentioned in the Rashbam is of a technical nature, why the Gemara chose to use the word velukma as opposed to velisni. But as far as the general topic is concerned, we are starting a long question, namely, why set up, why does the whole source have to teach a case of mechira when it could have taught this case of horish, where the gazlon stole something, died, and it's now in the possession of his sons. And as far as the Reish is concerned, there would be Eino Meid, because he does, the Nigzal has a vested interest, therefore the Nigzal could not testify on behalf of the children. And in the Seifa, he would be able to testify because he won't be getting anything back. Notice the marking between the Gemara and the Rashi. There's a kuf that's circled with a long vertical dashed line. These lines, until the end of that marking, until the number 2 that you see, are all part of the question. Therefore, the Gemara asks, V'lukmo b'yoresh. So, why did the Tana not choose that particular case? Honicho leman de omar rishus yoresh lav kirishus lokeach domi. That if one perceives the domain of the yoresh, of the heir, to be different than the domain of a purchaser, namely, the yoresh is not considered a shinui rishus, a transfer of domain. The yoresh is simply considered an extension of his father, the gazlon, in our case. I understand why it didn't teach that example, because you don't have the shinui rishus that's necessary. You have only yeush. You don't have the shinui rishus that's necessary to clinch the ownership of the portable in the hands of the heir. And if you don't have yeush and shinui rishus, therefore the nigzal has still a vested interest. He still has that vested interest insofar as that he'll get his item back. Shapir means it's understood, it's good, that the source did not teach Yoresh. Elo laman di omar reshus Yoresh ki reshus lokeach domi. There's another approach to how to view the domain of the heir. And this man to omar, this particular opinion holds that the domain of the Yoresh is similar to that of a lokeach. So if it's the same, it has the same status of lokeach, purchaser, my ikol lemeimar. Why did the Tana not teach that case? That's one question. Hence, a few lines up, you notice there was a little number one. V'oid kashyo le la'abaye. There's another problem that Abaye has with the whole Rav Sheshis approach. The following expression you notice is in quotation marks. It's actually a quote from the source that Nei she'achriyuso alav ve'ein achriyuso alav. The Reisha used that expression as to explain why ein me'idlo, why he cannot, why the nigzal can't testify because of ein achriyuso alav. But the way we're explaining things, the way Rav Sheshis is explaining the source, it would have been more accurate to say the following: Mipnei shehi chozeres lo, v'eino chozeres lo, miboyale. Notice that those phrases are, we've put in singular quotation marks to help in the reading, to read it together, but it's not a direct quote because it's a suggestion of what it should have said. Namely, that in the Reisha, Mipnei shehi chozeres lo, the land goes back to the Nigzal, hence he's considered having a vested interest in it, and that's why he cannot testify. And in the Seifa, once you establish that there's Gezel and Shinui Rishus, namely there's Yeush and Shinui Rishus, there's this giving up on the item and a transfer of domain, it doesn't go back to the original owner. Hence, Eino Choseres Lo, that would have been more accurate to have stated Ella. So as you see, we have a bow tie with a number 2 in the space between the Rashi and the Gemara. This will be a new approach to understanding the original source on Mem Gimel Amid Beis. Ella kideroven bar Shmuel. We will not be talking anymore about a case of Gozal Umochar. That was Rav Sheshis' approach. Rashbam points out, even though the halachas that we said are correct with regard to the case of Gozal Umochar, that in the case of landed property, he cannot testify. In the case of portables, he's able to testify. But that's not the explanation we're going to offer to the source itself. So what is Rovin Bar Shmuel talking about? The Omar Rovin Bar Shmuel, Mishmei de Shmuel, Hamocher Soda Lechavero, Shelo Ba'achrayas. It's a seller of land to a buyer. Ein Meid Lo Olea. The seller cannot testify to benefit his buyer against outside protesters. This is an idea that we've seen in the past. By the land remaining in the hands of his buyer and not fall into the hands of the outsider, if the seller has people to whom he owed money, if the seller of the land himself was a borrower of money, in the event that he doesn't have money to pay back his creditors, what do the creditors do? They seek out property that he held. In this case, if the outside protester wins and the buyer loses the land, the seller's creditors will have no place to go to collect their debt. the idea of having one's debts paid off is of benefit to the fellow who borrowed money. Everyone knows that, that a person likes to know that his debts are paid off. As we go on in the Gemara, we're going to encounter some use of brackets. In fact, if one is able to go to the next Omid, some will have to scroll to the next Omid or turn the page. You'll notice that there's a double brackets that will appear. This will necessitate our reading the Gemara a few times in order to capture the simple flow of the Gemara and then to reread it to see the inner workings, the inner substructure of the Gemara. We're explaining the Reisha, why in the case of a sale of property, the seller cannot testify to benefit his buyer against an outside protester. And we said, because if the buyer wins, the property will be available to the creditors of the seller. The Gemara also mentioned in passing that the sale from the seller to the buyer was a sale where there was no guarantee offered. There was no guarantee offered on behalf of the buyer. That's what the expression was, Hamocher Sode Lechaver Shelo Bachrayas. If he sold the land with a guarantee, then all the more so he would be having a vested interest in the buyer winning, because if the protester wins, then he'll immediately have to offer compensation to his buyer. We're saying something that goes further here. We're saying even if the seller did not offer a guarantee to the buyer, namely if the buyer loses the land, the buyer is not going to bother the seller, the seller still has a vested interest in the buyer winning, and that is that his creditors, the seller's creditors, will have a source of collection. This idea of having a source of collection is true when you're dealing with landed property. Because landed property, karkos, are the type of property that upon which a lien is formed. This is as opposed to portables. Creditors do not have a lien on portables insofar as going to the purchasers of portables to collect their debts. And that's what the Gemara is going to say now. But notice, as we read the Gemara, we're going to navigate with the brackets and the skipping initially. Continuing in the Gemara, V'davka bayis oisodeh. It's only in that case of the sale of landed property that we said ein meidlo, that the seller cannot testify on behalf of the buyer. Aval pora vitalis afilu aso'o apotiki nami lo. But a case of pora or talis sold, even if it were designed as a apotiki, as a source of collection, nami lo means they are not mishubad to the creditors. If they're as such that they're not mishubad to the creditors, therefore the seller has no vested interest in the buyer of his portables winning, because even if they win, the seller's creditors will not be able to seize the pora or talis as a source of collection. The Gemara used the expression apotiki, which is really a contraction of the expression apo tehe koi. When a person owes money, a borrower owes money, he's expected to pay his debt with cash. If he borrowed cash, he pays up with cash. There is a situation where a person can say that if I don't have cash, collect from a specific item. And he specifies something to be a source of collection. Once that item is specified, it's called an apotiki. However, if the apotiki, that item, is transferred, is sold to a buyer, then it could very well be that the creditor does not go to the buyer's door and say, give me that portable. Let's see how that works, which portables are included and not included in that particular halacha. And that's what the Gemara goes on to say. My taima, why is it that there's no shibud on the para or talis, even if they were designed to be a source of collection as long as they were in the hands of the original loive? Kidarava, the Omar Rava, and notice we're going to be running into a new brackets, and we're going to have to use that on our initial reading. The Omar Rava also shoyroi v'chamoyroi apotiki umochro. If a lender, a borrower, if a borrower of money designed his animal, shor or chamor, to be an apotiki, a source of collection to his creditor, umochro, and the borrower sold it before he ever paid up his debt, ein balchoiv goive heimenu, his creditor cannot collect from it. This, by the way, is in contradistinction to if one had a slave and made his slave into an apotiki, and that's what was in the first part, that was in the bracketed section of this last bracketed section, that would be different. And that's, we'll read that section in the brackets where there's a little aleph. Rava says, also avdoi apotiki umochro, balchov goive mimenu. If he had a slave and made it into an apotiki, and then sold the slave before he paid up his debt, the borrower's creditors can go to the buyer and collect the evid. My taima, the Gemara asks, why is this distinction between avdo apotiki versus his animals into an made into an apotiki? Hai islei kola, veha leslei kola. The evid creates a koil. When an evid is sold, the buyer, sold to a buyer, creates public knowledge. The buyer then bought, we can say more accurately, that when an evid is made into an apotiki, when the evid is made into a source of collection, that creates public knowledge. Hence, the buyer bought something that he knew could be seized upon. So he took the risk, and he has to pay up. However, v'ha lesle kola, namely the shor and the chamor, when they're made into an apotiki, it doesn't create public knowledge. As such, the buyer, the poor buyer, what did he know? He didn't know he was buying something that was designed as a source of collection. Hence, the creditors cannot seize the animal from the rishus of the buyer. All that having been said, we've seen a general picture that the resha of the source on Mem Gimel Amud Beis, where there was a sale of lands, even if they were sold without a guarantee, the seller cannot testify on behalf of his buyer against outside protesters, because that's ma'amido b'fnei ba'al chovo, that affords his creditor a source of collection, and we know that people like their debts paid off, hence he's considered, he, the seller, has a vested interest, and he's nogea b'edus and cannot testify. However, if you have a seller who sold portables, specifically para vitalis, that type of portable, even if they were designed as an apotiki, a specific source of collection on the part of creditors, and that para vitalis, who were made into an apotiki, were transferred, were sold to a buyer, the seller, who himself is a borrower, is able to testify. Why? Because he has no vested interest. Why? Because his creditors will not be able to collect from that pora or talis. So the seller can testify on behalf of his buyer and not be confronted with the problem of nogea b'edus. Of course, we did a lot of skipping in order to afford us the ability to see the Gemara in its general form. We must go back over the Gemara from Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, reading again with some skipping, because we have to take into consideration that within the first form of brackets, there's a sub-bracketed section, as we will do now. The Gemara said, second line from the bottom of Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, the end of the line, we said, Dafka Bayis Osodeh. Only in that case does the halacha say ein meidlo, where the seller cannot testify on behalf of his buyer against an outside protester. Why? Because he's no nogea b'edus, because he's ma'amido b'fnei ba'al chovo. He's making something available to be a source of collection for his creditor. Avol para vitalis. If a por or talis were sold to a buyer, lo mibaya bistamo de lo mishtabdole, I don't have to tell you this case, which is simple, that the por of a talis were stam. Stam means they were never designed as a source of collection. De lo mishtabdole, namely, they, the por of a talis, were not the subject of a lien. They were not mishubud to the seller's creditors. And in that case, it's clear to us, he's not ma'amid, by testifying on behalf of his buyer, he's not ma'amid b'fnei ba'al chovo, those things. Because the ba'al chov, the creditor, cannot collect from them. Notice the skip. Elo afilu. Aso apotiki namilo. But even, notice we skip to the after the second, the outside brackets. Even if the portable, namely the porovitalis, were made into an apotiki, a specific source of collection, that case as well, namilo, also not mishubod to his creditors. What does that mean, practically speaking, that it's not mishubad to his creditors? It means that if someone had owed money, namely our seller in this example, when it's transferred to a lokeach, to his buyer, the seller's creditors cannot seize them as a means of collection, as a source of collection. Let us go back over the Gemara again from the top line, but this time we're going to read the Gemara straight with the entire bracketed section. We said that I don't have to tell you the case of bistamo de lo mishtabdole, that a pora or talis that were sold from the seller to the buyer. The seller was a gentleman who owed money to creditors. He is able to testify on behalf of his buyer in the face of an outside protester, my taima. Why is he able to testify? Why is the seller able to testify and not be considered nogea b'davar? Mitatali ninhu. The item in question were portables. Umitatali lebal choiv lo mishtabdi. Portables do not absorb liens, meaning they don't become a source of collection once sold to a buyer. A person's creditors can collect from the borrower everything, anything they want, even the shirt off his back. However, once the borrower sells those items to a lokeach, his creditors cannot go to those purchasers. They don't owe him money. They simply bought from someone that owed money. The rule being, portables are not duty bound, are not meshubad to the creditors. The afal gav de kosav le miglimo de al kaspe. Even though one in writes when he borrows money, it's understood that you can collect even the shirt off his back. Hani mili de isnu binayu. That's true when they're in the possession of the borrower himself. Avalesnu binayu, if they're not around, they're not in the rishus of the borrower, they were sold to a lokeach, lo, the creditors cannot seize portables, and we're talking about stam portables. And that, the Gemara says, is simple. I don't have to tell you that. That's what the expression meant on the bottom of Omed Aleph, lo mi bayo. I don't have to tell you this. This is simple. Elo afilu aso apotiki namilo. Even if the seller, who was the borrower of the money, even if he designed them to be a specific source of collection, still, when they are transferred, when they're sold off, they are not mishubud. That's what nami lo means. They are not mishubud. They're not duty bound anymore. My time off. Why is it that even if they were made into an apotiki, once they are transferred to a buyer, the creditors of the seller cannot seize upon them? Kedarova. Yoma Rova. Also, Avdoya Potiki Mochro Balchov Govemeno. If a person had a slave, and this person had owed money, he was a borrower of money, and he sold his slave. The slave, which slave? A slave that he had designed to be a source of collection of debts. His creditors, Balchov Gove Mimenu, his creditors could go to the purchaser. However, Shoro v'chamora apotiki. If, however, the borrower made his animal into a source of collection, made it into an apotiki vis-a-vis his creditors, umochro, but he sold them, the shoro chamor, to a buyer, ein balchov gove heimenu. His creditors, the seller's creditors, cannot go to the buyer to collect the shoro chamor. My time off. Why is this distinction made? Answer, hi islay kola. The eved, when made into an apotiki, created public knowledge. Hence, one who buys such an item, the eved, knows he's taking a risk. Therefore, it's reasonable for the creditors to knock on the buyer's door. Say, hey, you know, you bought the eved from someone that owed us money. And this eved was made into an apotiki, so we have like first calling on it. And you knew that when you bought it. However, v'ha, the shor chamor les leikola, doesn't create public knowledge. When they're made into an apotiki, there isn't public knowledge created. Hence, it would not be fair to penalize the buyer of the shor chamor upon the collection attempted by the creditors. All of this piece of Gemara, everything that we've said in the past minutes, was designed to explain the source that we had seen on Mem Gimel Amud Beis, adopting Ravin Bar Shmuel's principle as the basis of explaining the distinction between the Reisha and the Seifa. In the Reisha, we said when it was a matter of selling of land, Eino Meid, because of Ma'amid Bifnei Baal Chovo, the seller had a vested interest in his buyer winning, thereby enabling his creditors to collect. The Seifa, on the other hand, was a sale of portables. Hare, we said there, he's able to be made because he's not Ma'amid Bifnei Baal Chovo, because his creditors would not be able to collect from those portables. The Gemara raises a question, though. We notice in our Gemara a triangle. This triangle is really the beginning of a series of triangles. Let us take a look at the note on the outside margin, Nosei Mivneh, the topic, and an explanation regarding the structure. The triangle surrounds initially the words Velechush, but we'll see more as we go on. Kushios al ha di Omar li'el b'metaltalin einom mishtabdim. We said before, in order to explain the Seifa, that portables are not bound to be a source of collection to the seller's creditors. Dehare yesh tsiyurim, there are situations, there are constructions, shegam metatalin mishtabdim, that portables themselves could be part of a shibud, a source of collection, a lien upon which the creditors could seize their collection. And if you say that portables can be a source of shibud, for our purposes, a source of collection, v'hodr kushi l'duchta, dahai mocher noge b'edus, then the original question comes back, that how is it that in the Seifa, the seller of the portables can testify against an outside protester? He, the seller, has a vested interest in it not falling into the hands of the protester, because by keeping it in the hands of his buyer, the seller's creditors will have a source of collection. We asked, but portables don't experience shibud. The Gemara explains there is a way that they can. Velechush, the Gemara asks, you'll notice between the Gemara and the Rashi a long question marking. There's a kuf that's circled with a vertical dashed line, indicating a long, all of these lines are dedicated to the question. Velechush, shouldn't we suspect, Dilma Akni Le Metaltali Agav Mekarkoi? Maybe the love, the borrower, who in our case is also known as the seller of the portables, but this are once borrowed money. Maybe the love was mishabed his metatalin to the malve by linking it to land. If so, the portables being linked to land, of course, as we mentioned before, is a source of collection. Namely, karka is mishubad. The portables, though, would also be mishubad. Di omar rabo, I akni le metatali agav mekarkoi. If a person is makne, transfers rights, we'll say, of metaltalin, together with karka, koni mekarkoi, koni metaltali. The kinyan that was made on the land affects the metaltalin as well, and makes them duty bound. They can be a source of collection. The Omer Rav Chista, v'hu de kosav lei. Rav Chista qualifies this with a technical note here, that is all fine and good, provided the borrower noted, he wrote to him part of a document, Delo ke asmachta udelo ke tofsa dishtori. Provided he said that this is not an asmachta is a type of statement or commitment that's not serious, that's not made with full intent. So by saying that this deal where he was meshabed his metavlan av mekarkos, delo ke asmachta means it's serious, it's with full intent. Delo ke tofsa dishtori means that this is a real shtar as opposed to a toifas shtar, which means a form from which other shtaros are copied from, but it itself not being a true shtar. So by saying it's lo ketofsi shtar means that this is a real, an actual document. The question, though, very simply stated, is how can the Tana be so sure that if it's mochar lo metalteli, that those metalteli are not Meshubad to the sellers Baalei Chov? Maybe they are. And if they're Meshubad to his Baalei Chov, by the buyer winning over the outside protester, the seller benefits by having his creditors having a source of collection. The Gemara answers, Hocho b'mayaskino, the Seifa that said that the seller is able to be made, can testify, indicating that he has no vested interest. Kegoin shelokach u'mochar la'alter. The portables that he bought and sold them immediately. Namely, there was no time in which the love could have been meshabed the metaltalin agav together with a piece of karka. He bought the metaltalin, sold the metaltalin, immediate turnover. Therefore, the metaltalin are not meshubad. And as such, his creditors, the seller's creditors, won't ever be able to collect from them. The Gemara is not finished, though. Valechush. Still, there's something else to suspect or take into consideration that would once again bring the metalpolin back into the picture of being the subject of shibud. And hence, the mocher, the seller, would be nogea b'edus. How is that? It's true that we said he bought and sold the metalpolin immediately, but maybe there was a prearranged shibud. What does that mean? That means that the borrower made a deal with his creditors and said that anything that I buy in the future will already be duty bound, will be bound to pay off my debts. Now, does the Tana seem to be choshesh for that? He doesn't seem to be choshesh for that by virtue of the fact he allows the borrower, who is also the seller, to, yes, testify on behalf of his buyer. So maybe this concept or this institution of advanced shibud doesn't even work. This is an issue that is debated elsewhere in the Gemara. But from our source, it would seem that we can take a side in that discussion. Let's see how the Gemara presents it inside. V'lechush dilma de'iknihu. Shouldn't we suspect that even though you're explaining the Gemara as that he bought and sold the metaltalin immediate turnover, we said, but maybe he did an advance shibud, which is called de'ikni. Namely, it's a very brief expression, means those things that I will buy, I'm already binding to this, to pay off this debt. So shouldn't we suspect that? But yet, the Tano says that the mocher is able to testify, therefore, shamis mino, should we conclude? De ikni, kona umochar, kona vahorish, lo mishtabe, namely that this type of advance binding where a person said, anything I buy will be duty bound. And he bought something and then sold it, or bought it and died, and the Yoresh got it, inherited it. Lo mishtabe. Should we conclude that it does not become duty bound by virtue of the fact we see over here that we allow the mocher, who's also the borrower, to testify? The Gemara says, I'm not going to conclude that. I'm not going to rule out that de'ikni, this idea of advance binding, in fact, I'm not going to rule out that it doesn't work. Maybe it does work. So then, how is it over here in our source that these concerning the portables, that we allow the seller, who also is a borrower of money, we allow him to testify on behalf of his buyer? Lo tzricha deka amri edim. Witnesses testify, yad inon bei behai. We know concerning this guy, namely the seller, delo havi le aro me olam. He never owned any land. If that be the case, if the seller of the portables never owned any land, so there was never a way for him to have linked his portables to the land, which would have made them bound to pay off his debt. So simply stated, this guy's portables could never have been subject to a case of de'ikni. The Gemara now raises another question. This is a part of our series of triangles, where the Gemara says, "Omar Rav Papa." Up till now, we've been asking, why is it so simple to allow, in the case of the portables, allow the seller to testify that it should remain in the Rishus of the buyer and not go to the outside protester? We're going to see in a moment that the seller still does have a vested interest. And we'll introduce the Gemara by telling the main point of the question. Even though sales that are concluded without a guarantee, when the buyer of such an item loses it to a creditor, the buyer bought it without a guarantee, he cannot go and get compensation for it. However, let's say someone bought an item and it turns out, he paid for it, and it turns out that what he bought was never owned by the seller. Not a case where creditors seized it from him, but where it turns out it was never owned by the seller. So I bought something that was not a legitimate purchase. According to Rav Papa, the buyer gets compensation. So let's think about that. Our case here involves an outside protester. If the outside protester wins, what happens? It's a case of nimtzei she'eino shelo. It turns out that it never belonged to the seller. If that's the case, how can the source say, let the seller can testify that it belongs to the buyer and not to the outside protester? Well, he has a vested interest. If the outside protester wins, it's a case of nimtzei she'eino shelo, and he, the seller, will have to compensate. So of course he doesn't want to compensate. He doesn't want to have to pay out money, so he's going to testify that it belongs to the buyer. That's called nogea be'edus. That's the question. The Gemara is asking, how can you tell me in the Seifa, where it was a case of mochar metatalin, mochar poravitalis, that the seller is able to testify. The Omar of Papa, Afagav the Omur Rabbonon, Hamocher Sode Lechavero Shaloba Achrayas, the one who sells a field. And the Rashbam points out not only a field, it involves the case of Pora Vitalis as well. The person who sells a Pora Vitalis without offering any guarantee, Ubo Balchov Vitorfa, and a creditor came and collected it from the buyer, Eino Choser Olov. The buyer cannot receive compensation from the one who sold it to him. However, another case, Nimtzeis She'eino Shelo, if, however, a buyer bought something and it turns out it was never the seller's in the first place, and that would be like in our case where the ma'arer, the outside protester, would win, Choser Olov, the buyer, goes to the one who sold it to him seeking compensation. Therefore, the seller is, in our case, Nogea Beedus. He still has a vested interest. Because if that outside protester wins, he's going to have to make compensation to the one that bought from him. Once again, why is it that in the Seifa, the seller is able to testify? The Gemara answers, Hocha b'mayaskinon. B'makir bo shehi bas chamoiroi. The case of the Seifa where the seller is able to testify and there's no chashash of nimtzeis she'eino shelo. Why is that? Because the buyer himself is moide, admits that the animal he bought is the offspring of an animal owned by the seller. The buyer over here, he is the one that stood to gain in the case of Nimtzei She'eino Shelo. If it's Nimtzei She'eino Shelo, he would have then sought compensation from the one who sold it to him. The buyer, is foregoing that option by saying that I know the animal that I bought. That's what the Gemara says, Hocha b'mayaskinim, b'makir bo shehi bas chamoro. The animal I bought is the offspring of the animal owned by the one who sold it to me. So of course, it was shelo all the time. The Rav Zvid, Omar, Rav Zvid disagrees with Rav Popa's din, and he says, Afilu nimtzeis she'eino sheloi, even in that case, eino choser olav. The buyer does not get compensation from the one who sold it to him. The omar lei, because the seller will say, lahochi zvini loch shelo b'achrayas, that's why I sold it to you without offering a guarantee. You bought something without a guarantee? That includes the case of nimtzei she'eino shelo, that you don't get compensation. If that be the case, in our situation, if the outside protester would win, would the seller lose anything? No, the seller won't lose anything because he doesn't have to offer compensation to the one that bought it from him. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.